listening to KPFK, and it's making me sick. They're discussing the Mexican elections, and they're interviewing some observers who were in Mexico City during the Mexican elections, and they're just going on and on about how it was a wonderful, fair election, and there was no cheating going on or anything like that. And I can't understand why these KPFK programmers are just, you know, taking all this crap. And these people are also saying that, well, the problem is that the liberals and the left in the world just don't have an agenda, and so that's why, you know, they didn't win, because they don't have a real agenda. And besides, the people of Mexico are smart enough to know that if they tried anything like voting for something overly radical, they would end up voting for Flavius, you know, all that kind of stuff, some kind of armed revolution. So they went along with the pre, and everything's wonderful, and it was all fair, and excuse me, I'm going to go get sick. Goodbye. Take care.
David, this is Melinda. Just calling to make sure that you've left.
An interview with Bob Dobbs and David J. Brown for 31 minutes. And then for 29 minutes, we heard Bob and Paul Krasner. And that segment was hosted by Gerald Fialka. And Jerry will be able to give you more information about Bob Dobbs. We'll hear that at the end of the program this morning. Right now, we're listening to a selection from Bob's Media Ecology, the first of two CDs. And I'm going to announce this later, but I'd also like to announce now, since this is my last time on the air, at least as far as I know, Bob's CDs and tapes are available from House of Records in Santa Monica. That's at 2314 Pico Boulevard, 310 area code 450-1222. Tell me you heard it here on David Porter's soon-to-be-gone Genesis of a Music. And now, let's see if it happens here. Bob, are you on the air?
Hello, David.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah, it's Bob. Dave, I just heard you speaking. It leaked through. What's this about? This is your last show?
Yes, unfortunately.
What happened?
Well, see, they're revamping the entire morning slot. And,
who's they?
Station management here. Like, I'm just, hold on just a second here. I'm doing something technical here. I'm playing with the mixed corporate media. So I'm just bringing this thing up to match my levels.
It's always changing, so you never catch up.
Well, it's my last show here, so figures I'd start the wrong tape, but fortunately I haven't erased anything at least. Anyway, so what happened was they are changing the entire weekday morning lineup. They are taking all music out of the weekday morning programming. They say they're doing this, and this is a pretty much a quote from the letter they sent to everybody. They used to have a 6 to 7 a.m. music slot every weekday morning. And they say that having an hour of music between two strong spoken word programs is awkward for the listener. Well, gee, I'm so glad that they have such a high opinion of their listenership, that they're always looking out for them, and any time something might be a little challenging, might be a little unusual, oh no, we have to get rid of that. This is why I think Marxists and Republicans are the same thing. It's just like two magnets, you've got two north ends, they repel one another. Anyway, so
and they're both failures.
That's true. Anyway, well, we'll see what about the 94 elections when the Marxist Bob Dole becomes majority leader.
Yeah, Bolshevik control.
Yeah, really. So what happens is this show is the only one being completely eliminated. And what they're doing is they looked at the weekday morning programs and they decided, this is the whole thing. In 82, they decided they're going to bring block programming to KPFK, block programming for blockheads, by blockheads. So they're doing it again in 1994. Big deal. Let them soil their own mess kit. So anyway, what they're doing is they're saying, hey, you know, despite this being awkward for the listener, they said, these guys are really doing well during fund drives. So what we're going to do is we're going to take this loser, Porter, who never does well during fund drive, unless that wild man Bill Mitchell is on, and we're going to put these two guys in his slot, giving him maybe an extra hour a month, total time, and we'll have them alternate week by week. And, boy, that'll really make that a successful 2.5 hours on Saturday morning. Well, good luck, people. Now, you know, it's funny. I guess I'm just overeducated, but the more I look at things, people don't know how to spell the word losing. They spell it loosing, L-O-O-S-I-N-G. And
that's because there's no visual framework anymore, no container space.
Well, I'm sorry. I know how to spell, and I'm kind of elitist enough to insist that other people, especially in management positions, know how to do that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. They said the reason this show is being eliminated outright is because it didn't fit. It was the piece of the puzzle that didn't fit anywhere in the evolving format at the station at this time.
Well, Dave, you can't talk about media ecology for 9 shows and not have it affect the station. I think the hidden agenda, and they're not aware of it, is that my influence has permeated that part of Los Angeles, and you're a victim of what you've been advocating. But media ecology, it is time to shut down the electric media for a while.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look for a job where I'm not on mic. I'll be board-opping a talk radio show. I think that's what I want to do. Not having music that I have to listen to, not having to talk on the air, not having to respond personally to listeners.
That's a compromised form of media ecology.
Oh, no, I think it's a salvation form for me because, really, believe me, I think I need to just pull back. I love twisting knobs and sliding faders, but I am not going to miss the microphone. I have by the way, I'm being invited to Amsterdam. Expenses paid in November, so one door closes as another door opens.
That's right. Media ecology is inevitable at this point. Every station that has featured me has been turned off, at least the programmer that featured me. This was inevitable. I never told you this, Dave, but it's going to give you more slack.
Well, when they put the noose around my neck, I guess you need all the slack you can get.
Yep, and I can give it to you. So are you finished?
Are you slack Willy then?
Yes.
Hey, let's take some listeners. We got some on. Okay, let's see. Just push the magic button here, and you're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Yes, thank you, Dave. Thank you, Bob.
Hello.
You're going to miss the program. I'd like to ask Bob. I know that Marshall was very much interested in secret societies, Masons in particular. Had he lived today, there is a particular group of people I find cropping up all the time in researching information about the intelligence world. They're known as the Skull and Bones. I wonder, Bob, if you've heard of them and if you have any information you can give to us as the listeners about the Skull and Bones.
Yeah, I've been a member of the Skull and Bones for decades.
I see.
It's just an American branch of the 322 grouping in Europe. The 322 grouping goes back into the 1830s in Germany. But the best source for the Skull and Bones in particular is the biography of George Bush put out by Lyndon LaRouche's group, the Executive Intelligence Review.
I can't find that anywhere. I know that Anthony Sutton has a book out.
He has a, his book's okay, but I think LaRouche gives a bigger context. The way to get LaRouche information is to dial 703-777-9451.
I see. Now, 773-777-9451
in Virginia. That book on George Bush is a good introduction. Then you can jump into Mae Brussel and Dave Emery and Anthony Sutton, Sherman Skolnick.
Well, no, Dave Emery doesn't know a whole lot about them. But
who, Dave Emery? He knows a lot about the Skull and Bones.
Well, he knows about them, but
he's learned a lot from me.
It's not an important group to his.
Beg your pardon?
It's not an important factor as far as explanation of world politics is concerned.
You mean Dave Emery's opinion?
That's correct.
Yeah, but Dave is a figure-ground relationship. In relation to people understanding Skull and Bones, he has other things he wants to put out, which he feels are more important. He understands the importance of the Skull and Bones grouping, but he wants to emphasize other things. It doesn't mean that he privately doesn't know or research that stuff.
I see. Now, what year were you graduated in?
What year to who?
What year were you graduated in?
In Skull and Bones?
Yes.
Well, you never graduate from the Skull and Bones.
What year were you tapped into?
Well, I was born in 1922, same year as LaRouche, as a matter of fact. And the movie Catch-22 and novel Catch-22 shows me as that young, charming, WASP blonde guy in 1944 running around in Italy, you know, building up some black market profits.
Milo.
That's when I... Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, that's when I worked with James Jesus Angleton, 44-45, was involved with the Knights of Malta organization out of Rome, and it was shortly after that that I was integrated with Alan Dulles' networks into the Yale OSS-CIA network, which is the Skull and Bones.
I see. Now, I guess you knew of Averill Harriman.
Yes.
Yes,
no, you can read a lot about the woman behind her, behind him, the new book on his widow.
Pamela.
Yes, that's a really good book, which LaRouche has done a lot of research on Pamela Harriman.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes back to Harriman in World War II. I knew her around Churchill in the late 30s, and she's a very interesting character.
Yes, she is. Now, she is a primary figure behind President Clinton's ascension.
And Bush. She's behind both of them.
Yes. Now, I wonder if Lloyd Cutler is a member of the order.
Yes. There was a great document put out by the LaRouche organization in 1976 talking about President Carter's link to international terrorism. And if you can get to that in a library on microfilm, it lists a lot of people that are still relevant in President Clinton's cabinet, people going back into Carter, people in the Bush administration. They index all these people, and Lloyd Cutler is featured prominently in that packet of information.
Now, I have one other question. Who will be the first woman member of the order?
My wife, Connie.
Ah, well, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm emphasizing LaRouche today because I wanted to point out that since this is my last show, then I had to reevaluate what I want to say, and I will say this, for those who won't have access to me for a while, I'll be back in some form. If you want to read about my work in the Skull and Bones and my wife's work, read Norman Mailer's novel, Harlot's Ghost.
Yes. Yeah.
Came out in 1991. That gives the history of my view of things in the 50s and early 60s. Now, the other point is that Lewis Lapham, the editor of Harper's Magazine,
yeah,
has come out gung-ho for Marshall McLuhan. And when Lewis Lapham does that, then it's time to jump to another holy office. I appreciate what Jared Fialka has done in creating an interest in Marshall McLuhan in L.A., but the real challenge for Jerry now is to bring to the Midnight Special Bookstore Lyndon LaRouche himself. I hope Jerry's up for this, and I will continue talking about LaRouche aspects maybe over the next hour if it doesn't irritate too many people and doesn't cause Dave to be cut off early.
I see. Well, I'd love to ask a lot more questions, but I appreciate the information.
But be warned, a Trilateral Commission member, Lewis Lapham, when he starts talking about Marshall McLuhan, it's time for us to adopt another metaphor.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bob, I just wanted to point out something here. You'd be happy to know as a Skull and Bones alumnus, I got a book from, I think, 1892 on Yale, and it shows a picture of the Skull and Bones edifice, the ivy-covered walls, and it says that no one has ever officially seen the inside of Skull and Bones Hall, so in order to describe it, they had to go back to the people who helped build it. And this is a late 19th century book, just a little over 100 years ago, so you can be happy to know that your secret is still safe.
Yeah, where is that book?
Yeah, it's in my library.
Is it a rare book?
It's an old book. It's a very old book.
That's a good find. It sounds familiar. My father may have had that book.
It predates Charles Ives' attendance there, and it also describes the calcium light night ritual the night before Tap Day. And since I've edited the piece Calcium Light Night for the Ives Society, It's very helpful for a scholar like me to know this. I just want to say this is KPFK Los Angeles, and I'm here with Bob Dobbs on my final show on KPFK, except as a guest, maybe, if they don't ban me from the building, like they have done with so many people here. And you can call in with Bob if you want, like some listeners are, at 818-985-5735, 985-KPFK, and you're on the air with Bob.
Oh, hi. I just want to let you guys know that I'm not going to miss you because I never get up this early to listen. But one of the important things you did say this morning, since I happened to be up, is that it's time to move on. And when you realize that, then it doesn't matter that you're not going to be on KPFK. Because as things change in the world, whether it's electronically or superficially or spiritually or whatever word they are, things change for the good because we need to move on, right, to something different. And the audience you have here is probably limited. And wherever you're going to go, you're going to do it another way, not the same way. And then maybe you will not be heard in the same way, but be heard anyhow.
Are you interested in having Lyndon LaRouche speak at the Midnight Special Bookstore?
Well, let me just say to the listener here that she obviously hasn't tuned in early enough to hear what we were talking about earlier when I said my future ambition in radio is to be off mic behind the scenes. Let's go to another caller, someone who's a little more in tune with what we're doing this morning. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to talk about some things. If anyone's interested, we should be writing Cliff Roberts on the cancellation of the show, and especially the cancellation of Bill Mitchell and Bob Dobbs. The address, I think, is 2937.
It's 3729, and as far as my appearances go, you can do what you want, but I'm not really looking for advocates myself.
Okay.
But you can say whatever you want about Bill and Bob.
2729 Cahuenga Boulevard?
3729 Cahuenga Boulevard West.
The caller, we want to be off the air. We're trying to turn ourselves off.
Yeah. Okay.
So don't write.
Okay. And if you want to know where to go from now, from here, as far as where us as the Bob Dobbs community is going from here, I guess you could call 310 area code.
306.
Yeah, 306.
7330.
Yeah. You got it. The other night I got it. And I wanted to ask, I'm going to just fire off as many questions as I can, and as soon as you want to hang up on me, Dave, you can go ahead. But
great, let's
you
go.
Can comment. But I'd like to know about the media thing, what do we do with, how do I explain this? With the media, how will us learning how to get around in the media ecology, media environment, help us to stop the exploitation going on in the big corporations? And how will understanding our past history help us, how will understanding our past really help us to understand the future?
Okay, I'll answer the second question first, all right?
Okay.
Here's why you should understand the past. I'm quoting, "In physical science, as in geometry too, the student masters the comprehension of the subject by reliving, as nearly as possible, the mental experience of the original discovery by the original discoverers. In that approach, a collection of original sources replaces the course textbook, the high school college textbook. The original crucial experiments are relived by the student, and improved better experimental versions of the same crucial hypotheses are also scrutinized. Most important physical discoveries are to be accomplished by aid of recognizing the faulty assumption embedded historically in the supposed proof of a hallowed truism of contemporary professional certainties. A grounding in crucial historical source materials is obviously the virtually indispensable foundation for scientific rigor. So the creative physicist, which you could be, will be forever periodically re-examining the work of Kepler and Kepler's predecessors again and again. And in this and kindred Socratic enterprises, the foundations of coming scientific revolutions are being established, reaching so the indefinitely distant horizons of the future." All right, now the first question is, If you understand tetrad management, then you understand how the corporations are controlling and manipulating and exploiting you. They are using tetrad management to organize your life. So that's why you study the laws of media as expressed by Marshall McLuhan, because you'll understand how you've been put into the shape you've been put into.
Mm-hmm. But what about, like, in thinking about the future as if it, in terms of the past, it trips me out because every time we think we have some kind of revolution going on, it backfires on us.
Right. Now, I got a relevant point to make. That's a, you're tuned into me. You I have certain things I'd like to say, and you're evoking them thanks to you, thanks to what you're thinking about. Okay, so how do we relate the past, the future, and the present? They should be considered as an indivisible unit.
Well, how would that work?
All right. Thank you. As to the present society, it depends upon our singular function for its quality, for the quality of our present society, its potential for successful survival. As to the future society, however far it advances above the level of the present, our singular, your singular contribution remains actively embedded in the foundations of that future, more advanced state. As to the past generations, by acting upon the singular contributions of each, directly or even only indirectly, we enrich those with our own singular contribution. So do we bridge the gulfs of time to establish so a direct form of transaction with persons from the most distant places in the remotest corners of mankind's past and future time. As this relationship exists, so is all humanity presented to us as an indivisible singularity of our universe. The expanse of past through future time, which is the span of mankind's existence, now dig this, does not render mankind divisible. The expanse of past through future time does not render mankind divisible into periods or stages of time. All right? There are no stages or phases. It's one moment. As I am in direct relationship to my remotest ancestor and your remotest posterity at once, the image of absolute time dissolves, replaced by the appropriate notion of relativity in physical space-time. Similarly, all mankind's relationship to the universe as a whole, mankind's efficient negentropic existence as a singularity of that negentropic existence and negentropic universe, so in our mind can we approximate blah, 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 blah.
So once we free ourselves from time, then we free ourselves from all oppression, I guess.
That's right, but time is free.
Okay, but how do the beings from the Buddhas relate to all this?
They're the future, and they've been allowed to come to us at this time thanks to the work of Gauss, Mozart, Kepler, Nicholas of Cusa, Socrates, David Porter.
Bob Dobbs.
Bob, of course. Thanks to these people, and should we mention some animals? Should we mention some insects? Perhaps not.
We shouldn't talk about other KPFK programmers.
No. How about Joan of Arc?
That might work.
Yeah.
Also, who...
In other words, they are arriving because of the effort people made in the past. And
yeah.
That past goes back to the most remoted and remotest points.
Yeah, that makes sense. Who were you in whatever your past life was that you say you've been around for 72 years?
Yes.
And now, but your bio things that Connie wrote for you.
The what?
The bio that your wife wrote for you.
I don't get the word. The bower?
The bio.
Biography.
Yes.
Oh, the biography of what? That she wrote, yes.
It said that you came into someone's body who was, like, young in the 60s.
Yes.
So it's like, who were you, what role did you play in this past life where you started back in the 20s and 30s, I guess?
The thing is that my name was always Dobbs.
Okay.
And I grew up in Paris in the 20s and 30s. And in the 50s, as you can read in Harlot's Ghost by Norman Mailer, you know, an autobiography of me and Connie, I was shipped to North America, and in the middle 60s, I was stationed in Nova Scotia. And apparently, though I don't recall this, I had to occupy a young man's body. Now, I don't know how it was done to me, because the Secret Council 10 were my employers, and they're the ones that created this weird situation where my wife and I inhabit the bodies of two high school students. I don't know who they were. Some people think it's a person named Bob Dean and a woman named Carolyn Wheeler, but I don't have a recollection of that. All I know is that I'm in the body that I thought I had. So if it's not the body I had, then my memory has been altered.
You just don't remember, Bob, because of all those drugs.
And D-cells, which stops the aging process.
Are those energizers?
Yes, the water energizers. The thing is that I wrote a memo to Prince Charles 2 years ago, and that's featured in my book, Fatic Communion with Bob Dobbs, and I explained that period in Nova Scotia in the late 60s, early 70s. And it is pretty clear to me, but it's almost like I had to channel that because I'm not sure if it really happened.
But you seem like a not evil person, but the way you describe yourself, like when you were shooting Kennedy and stuff.
Yeah.
You seem like, in the past at least, you were evil at some time and maybe you repented or something.
I was what?
Evil.
And then pensative?
No, he said repentive. Actually, I think that was a double who was shot in Dallas, and I think the real Kennedy is that guy on the cover of those cool magazines you see in the supermarket.
No, not true, Dave. He was shot. Here's the point. The new movie by Oliver Stone, Natural Born Killers?
Yeah, I just saw that.
You just saw it?
Yeah.
Good. Well, that is about me and Connie now. That is a good representation of my life in the 80s and how lucky I was to escape the control of the Secret Council of Ten and get to the position now where I personally control the Secret Council of Ten and actually probably am the only person next to my wife alive on the planet today. So you're dead and you don't know it. You've been manipulated just like I was in the 60s. All right? So the interesting thing is that Natural Born Killer shows the luck that Connie and I had to get to the point that we have arrived at today, and it required murdering a lot of people. And Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, many people you never heard of, Walter Duberstein. I was involved in the murder of him back in the 80s, early 80s. These things are inevitable when you are brought up in an aristocratic sensibility, which is what I was brought up in. We are not human. Us aristocrats do not have the normal sentiments.
Noblesse oblige. Well,
yeah.
You know, it's...
And like, I'm not for that. I'm trying to turn that around now. But I was able to do the inhuman activities I did before, partly because of peer group pressure, and because of my genetic background, and because of the environment I was brought up in. It was a very womb-to-tomb situation.
Bob, I'm kind of reminded of what John Cage told in a story. He was asked what one of the sages said the purpose of mushrooms was, and I think you share something with the mushrooms in this. The purpose of mushrooms is to rid the world of old garbage.
Yeah.
Going back to figuring out the past through the future, it seems like there's no way we could have predicted, like, the old environmental cataclysm. Not the media ecology one, but the one that everybody's talking about at the time when we first started cutting down the forest and first started using oil.
Yeah, we could not have predicted that, you're saying.
Yeah.
That's right, because our interaction with nature was that nature was an invisible, unconscious environment for us.
So back then, it seems like seeing the future through the past wouldn't have worked, so why would it work now?
Well, individuals could see it. The sages, the shamans of that period in history. The point is, the crowd is what we're up against. The movement of the collectivity. And the collectivity does not know itself. It's what Frank Zappa says, the most common element in the universe is stupidity. And that's the crowd behavior, page 112 or 118 of Finnegan's Wake. Lead kindly foul, foul being French, F-O-U-L-E, for crowd. The crowd dynamic is our collective unconscious. We don't have a Jungian, in for tetrad management, the Jungian unconscious, the Freudian unconscious, is not relevant. That's too particular, too tiny. It's the immediate unconscious, the immediate environment. For example, this radio station, this electric environment we're using right now and its ramifications on other media is something we are unconscious of, if you're not me. Right now, so our immediate environment, page 81, top line of Finnegan's Wake, the viability of vicinals, if invisible, are invincible. Now, the vicinals are your immediate vicinity, and your immediate vicinity is the group you're in, the crowd, the environment. It's the evolution of our immediate cliche environments, our crowds, that is not unpredictable. It was up to this point. In the 20th century, we can now predict it through tetrad management. But for you, as a member of that group, you're unconscious of its dynamic. So it's the crowd we're dealing with that is unconscious. And it was only now through the humanizing of the electric media that we become autonomous from the dynamics of the crowd and see the dynamics of the crowd and therefore retrieve shamanistic perspective privately. But that is not adequate for collective management, which is to realize that the electric environment makes us see what it is. Therefore, it's a drug, and it makes the crowd think it is immortal, that it is super percipient, omniscient. The crowd is a megalomaniac right now, and we have to learn how to deal with that.
But it seems like when you look at everything, we've been progressing. But even if we keep progressing, if we go from, say, we started out as kings, and then we went to democracy, and then we got dissatisfied with that because it was just a rich people's democracy.
Right.
And then we keep going forwards, and it's a democracy where more people have a little bit of power, but then we're not satisfied with that because it's politicians. So then we go forward and go to a thing where it's a more direct form of democracy. But then maybe we'd have a tyranny of the majority, and maybe even in an anarchic sense, we'd still wind up with people still trying to dominate people in some sort of sense.
That's right. That we are going to have wars in the future. The difference is, now this is why one shouldn't emphasize hoping for a peaceful zone to come, a peaceful time. Forget peace, forget war. These things will continually happen because the crowd can only express its identity through violence. What is different, which I'm bringing in the lockdown Bob Rule situation, that in over the next 25, 30 years, we will have a global theater where you, no matter where you came from, no matter what culture, creed, belief, bias you have, if you can do the job well, then you will get the job. In other words, the most talented, the most apt for a particular position or a situation or a performance, will get the task to do that. That is the basic difference between the past and the future. The oligarchy, the part that I was a member of, never allowed real talent to be in the position it should be. We hogged talent. We said we were the talented. We wouldn't let you in.
See, Bob, that's why I'm being canceled.
That's right. Moving on to real situation. So, caller, the point is that human crowd dynamics will continue, but within that, the electric autonomous individual will be appreciated. As a matter of fact, the reason we oligarchs are allowing you in is because the problems are so incredibly complex, we're willing to hand them to you. We're going to pass the buck to you. So there's opportunity for everybody in the future state over the next 30 years. And the global campus that'll come, the basic democratic complaint, the democratic impulse to let the person who's qualified have that position, which the oligarchs never allowed, that democratic impulse is what's going to be different in the next 100 years. That's the only thing that's going to be different. And we can say it took us 7,000 years to get to this point, but it's going to be a major change. But the content of that situation will still be crowd dynamic, crowd violence, and crowd ecstasies.
Maybe the next wars will be the wars of the spirit, like in the keeping souls from coming into their next body will be the next war instead of a violent war, since we've seen the...
You've been listening to my previous shows, haven't you? What?
Since it seems like we've gone beyond violent wars like nuclear war and...
Hardware war.
Yeah, now like the next war might be a war of the spirit, keeping spirits from reincarnating or something.
Yeah, wetware war.
I don't think he heard your comment that you suggested he'd heard your earlier programs.
You've been listening to tapes of my earlier show, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've been doing good work. You're a student of Bob.
Well, trying. I just got into Finnegan's Wake, and I haven't gotten too much into McLuhan yet.
Oh, don't worry. You can go to try LaRouche. Now, there's something that's really going to bother you. You try to read LaRouche, you'll get so angry, you'll hate the guy.
Well, I'm trying to figure out why you get into that guy, because he has these views, like, of killing black people and stuff.
Well, have you ever looked at Persian rugs?
Well, I'm blind, so I can't see.
Right. Okay. Persian rugs are perfectly woven to a pattern planned, but they always weave a mistake within the rug. They always put a mistake within the rug. Now, many people might think LaRouche's mistake. I know they think that, so I put him in there, into the rug I weave. The point is that LaRouche is an incredible genius, and you need to be detached from the activities of your mind and its biases. Therefore, you have to challenge your own natural inclinations, and your inclination may be not to read LaRouche. That's why you have to read and study him. You must become, judge not evil, become evil.
My private center sees him as not a totally bad person. I just see him as someone that might have had some wrong information from some people and not really read up on his facts.
Well, nobody's perfect. McClung got lots of wrong information, too. So did Mae Brussel.
I think this is one reason I like to tune in C-SPAN and watch Bob Dornan ranting and raving. It's because it gives me something that I know I'm not.
That's right. It gives you identity.
Well, thank you, Bob, for talking and for having the show, and I'll let other people talk.
Well, if you're blind, then you are ahead of all of us, because in tactile space, it can't be seen, so we're all blind, and your advantage, because you already deal with it physically. Now, maybe your disadvantage, if you think that that's what you are, but you are not media-wise blind. You're not blind as you are physically. You are blind media-wise also, and that's a bigger problem. So we are all blind. We are all deaf today. Therefore, Miss America is a beautiful deaf person. All right? You see, the handicap, this is the Forrest Gump theme, the handicap becomes God, because the crowd knows it's handicapped in this situation. So you, in particular, are blind. You have the advantage of dealing with acoustic space, which we can learn from, but also don't think that you're blind, or how I say this, don't be preoccupied with overcoming your blindness, because there's a bigger blindness that you're part of. That's a discarnate blindness. And everybody can contribute to overcoming that. Ironically, your abilities as a blind person how to get around are not relevant to the blindness of the tactile space. So therefore, you are handicapped in a way that you have to learn my stuff to overcome the collective blindness. So those people that celebrate you and celebrate the advantages you have as a blind person, don't be fooled by them.
Yeah.
Tell them no. We are all handicapped in a way that only Bob talks about. Now, note the movie Forrest Gump. A few years ago, there was a movie called Slow Bob in the Lower Dimensions. Now, Forrest Gump is a slow Bob in the Lower Dimensions. The reason people are hypnotized by him, let's say the crowd is because Forrest Gump has no self-consciousness. And the media today, our evolution has been an intensification of self-consciousness. Media mirror us back to ourselves. So self-consciousness is the bane of our situation in the 90s. We are too self-conscious. So we worship someone who's not self-conscious. In a way, blind. Deaf. Hence, Miss America is deaf this year.
Well, let's move on here. We got a whole switchboard full of callers here.
Okay, thanks a lot for the work, man.
All right, bye. Bye.
By the way, I'm reminded of something, Bob. Let me just paraphrase this. You know, life is like a box of chocolates. Some parts of it are so sweet you just want to puke. I don't believe it. My last show, and I finally made Bob totally lose it.
That's right, you did.
Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Well, hello, Bob Dog.
Oh, hi.
Professor Illuminatus.
Yes, indeed, Bob.
That is your name, right?
Yes, indeed, it is. And as promised, Bob...
Now, are you going to start celebrating? Are you going to claim that you're knocking us off?
Well, Bob, you're...
Because you're not going to have access either.
Well, your insight is almost unsurpassed, Bob, and I'm about to get to that, but I first would like to read to you a gem of Illuminati history, as we have both been going into over the past. Well, just, it's a shame that the show is going off. The true history won't be revealed, but let me share this with you, Bob. Are you ready? Certainly there was an undercurrent of things esoteric, in the most mystical sense of that word, beneath the surface of Illuminism. In this respect, the order followed exactly in the footsteps of the Knights Templars. The Templars returned to Europe after the Crusades, bringing with them a number of choice fragments of Oriental occult lore, some of which they had gathered from the Druzes of Lebanon and some from the disciples of Hassan ibn al-Sabah, the old wizard of Mount Alamut. If there was a deep mystical current flowing beneath the surface of Illuminism, it is certain that Weisstop was not the Castalian Spring. Perhaps the lilies of the Illuminati and the roses of the Rosicrucians were, by a miracle of nature, flowing upon the same stem. The old symbolism would suggest this, and it is not always wise to ignore ancient landmarks. There is only one explanation that meets the obvious and natural requirements of the known facts. The Illuminati were part of an esoteric tradition which had descended from remote antiquity and had revealed itself for a short time among the humanists of Ingolstadt. One of the blossoms of the sky plant was there, but the roots were afar in better ground. Weisstop emerged as a faithful servant of a higher cause. Behind him moved the intricate machinery of the secret schools. As usual, they did not trust their full weight to any perishable institution. The physical history of the Bavarian Illuminati extended over a period of only 12 years. It is difficult to understand, therefore, the profound stir which this movement caused in the political life of Europe. We are forced to the realization that this Bavarian group was only one fragment of a large and composite design. All efforts to discover the members of the higher grades of the Illuminist Order have been unsuccessful. It has been customary, therefore, to assume that these higher grades did not exist except in the minds of Weisstop and von Nigg. Is it not equally possible that a powerful group of men resolved to remain entirely unknown moved behind Weisstop and pushed him forward as a screen for its own activities? Now, not to mention Weisstop as a front man, lower-level patsy for the Illuminati. All hip, illuminated historical revisionists know that Karl Marx was also a front man for the Illuminati. And, you know, when he had joined the group that was called the League of the Just, or the League of Just Men, which was actually it was Weisstop's Illuminati under a different name, and that was the way they had issued publicly the Ten Planks of the Illuminati, which turned out to be the Ten Planks of Communism. But this is the reason why Marxists are so anal retentive and humorless. And
just a man.
Like Republicans.
Exactly. And
not a woman, he's just a man. The League of Just Men.
That's right. And your concern for the feminine aspect to Illuminati operations is a very sharp criticism that I, because the show won't go on, I won't be able to explain thoroughly, but there is a working of the feminine principle, but you immediately pointed that out. And
okay, the Illuminati, what you said agrees with LaRouche, that the history of mankind is indivisible. The past, present, and future. Therefore, the Illuminati was always there and always will be.
Yes.
Now, we can look at that constant and see how the environment changes the conditions of the Illuminati. So when the alphabet came in, it emphasized the Western world. Therefore, the Illuminati took on a Western aspect. Left hemisphere, just men.
Yes.
All right? That was through the alphabet.
That's right.
Now, the electric environment has come in, obsolescing that left hemisphere Illuminati style. You now have a right hemisphere Illuminati style, which is called the feminine. Now, the real Illuminati, which the Secret Council 10 is an extension of, is the comprehensive tactile master in the interval between the left alphabetic and the right feminine electric. In that interval is where the real Illuminati action takes place today.
Very good.
It's like What Zappa says in his movie 200 Motels, he has the animated sequence called The Dental Hygiene Dilemma.
Yes.
That was his metaphor for the fact that the gap is where the action is.
Is that close also to the crack in the cosmic egg, the actual crack that is the area of action that Joseph Chilton Pierce talks about?
No, the problem with the crack, it's a visual image. It's an extension of the mirror. Now, in my book, on the first page or so, you'll see the phrase, the analogical mirrors. We have to look at a figure ground. The Illuminati is a mirror, constantly through all time. But the conditions of the mirror changes. So the Western left hemisphere was a visual mirror, the egg with the crack, but now we're into an acoustic tactile mirror. How do you mirror something that's essentially non-visual? That was attempted by James Joyce in Finnegan's Wake. So the wisdom I offer today is how to be flexible in the modalities of the analogical mirrors. You could say that the lamp is the acoustic mirror because it's light through. Symbolism in the 19th century played off the mirror versus the lamp. The mirror is visual, the lamp is acoustic. The tactile mirror is me as I am today with you. That's a mirror for you, but it's not just a visible mirror. So you know the crack in the cosmic egg is a rearview mirror nostalgic retrieval.
Well, Bob, you're in flawless form today.
I have to be.
As always.
I have to get everything done today because I've only got another 40 minutes.
That's right. Well, let me ask you just two quick questions. Why do you say out like oot, like Buster the Body Crab on that Cheech and Chong record?
Because I'm a Canadian.
You are a Canadian.
Yeah, well, when I came to Nova Scotia in the 60s, that programming that I talked about earlier in my brain, I mean, I'm French. I grew up in France for 30 years, and I was very eloquent in Paris in French culture, French language, but I became, whatever they did to me in the middle 60s, and I became a local Maritimer, a Nova Scotian in Halifax and Dartmouth, and I took on the dialectic of that, or let's say the dialect.
So that is the environmental residue left over from your upbringing?
Right. And so since I was mutated at that point, my mutation,
that's
whatever
what
happened to Bob Dobbs, and it was only lately that I was able to recover who I was.
I understand.
Which comes to a very important syndrome of our time, the false memory syndrome. Since we've extended our central nervous system, that makes our old heads, our brains, our memories fluid. Because there's no reference point. They don't have a container. They don't have the alphabetic print-oriented container. So our brains have been splayed across the media landscape. And that's why people now hallucinate their past. They make up memories of all kinds of victimization or abuse.
Now, is that memories such as satanic ritual abuse or alien abduction?
Right.
I see.
See, the reason why false memory happens is that in the electric ground, where there's no container, no reference point, we make sense every minute. We make it up. We live fabulous,
yes.
Fabulous, fabled lives now. Therefore, we can rechange our memory, our past, and we can change our projections into the future. Actually, within that intensity of the future, we can start to become ESP. We can start to predict. But the problem is, in the electric environment, ESP is old hat, when effects precede causes.
Yes.
That's a heavy statement, but check it out in Marshall's book, Take the Day the Executive as Dropout. But the false memory syndrome is like calling this making and retrieving of hallucinated aspects of our memory. To call it false memory is a misnomer. It's like calling an automobile a horseless carriage. The point is, it's made-up memory. It is creative memory. And so because our memories are free to be creative, we're going to claim we remember a lot of things that never actually happened.
Yes.
But that didn't happen to me. I was actually altered. I'm not expressing a false memory situation. And my accent proves it. Because if you meet me, how could a Maritimer know what I know?
Yes.
But I do have that tone in my voice. I almost can't say my R's very clearly.
Yes. Well, Bob,
I'm not a perfect thespian in that sense.
The last thing I want to say, Bob, is if old brother Tariq calls, go easy on Tariq. I'm not sure he fully understands the subgenius perspective. He may not even have the book. And I say that because the last time you finished with him, I could hear the world turning circles running round his brain. So.
Well, Tariq and I, I'm in touch with Tariq because we've had that conversation, and I'm glad he called last show because we got that on tape for all to hear for all time. We've had that conversation many times, but I think he got it this time.
Yes, I think even though he was somewhat overloaded, he did get it.
Yeah.
All right, Bob. Well, this is...
Well, thanks for being on my team.
Well, thank you. This is Professor Illuminatus Rex Mundi, H-O-A-T-F, signing off. And as always, ewige Blumenkraft, ewige Schlangenkraft, und ewige Weiblichkeit.
Do you know they say he's dead? Robert Anton Wilson is dead?
Well, I hear from a source that the Robert Anton Wilson that called in from the true Robert Anton Wilson, who called in from the alternate universe...
Yeah, May 29th.
He's going to say farewell, and he's going to be calling in soon.
Good.
So he can talk about that.
Well, there's a new magazine on the stands. I can't remember the title, but it's dedicated to Papa John Creech, Frank Zappa, and Robert Anton Wilson.
Really?
Two of them are dead.
Really?
Is Wilson dead?
Well, he may be like the Schrodinger's cat. He may be dead and alive at the same time.
That sounds like me.
Okay. Well, Bob, I look forward to crossing paths and swords with you in the future.
And remember, in relationship to you, I am Professor Tim Finnegan.
I'm glad you clarified that, Bob.
Yeah. In relation to you, and when you're my ground, and you're my ground when I'm talking to you, I am Professor Tim F.X. Finnegan.
Well, thank you, Bob, for clarifying that to the profane.
Thank you.
All right, good night, Bob.
And that makes me a Porter the Bartender.
Well, that's what HCE is. And Finnegan's Wake, he's a bartender.
Yeah, well, you know,
you've got a very important position in your heritage.
Oh, of course. That's why I'm hosting Bob.
Yep.
Let me just say it's KPFK Los Angeles, official ID at 7:56 in the morning, Saturday, September 24th. I'm David Porter. This is my last show. This is the last Genesis of the Music on KPFK. And I have a few callers here. I have no order which order they are in, so we'll just take this one, and you're randomly selected to be on the air with Bob.
Will it be Mark?
No, this is one of the ones that have been silent for so long that know that this is our only access, and in that you say this is your last show.
Yes.
What is going on there, and is this part of the political thing that went on about 8 years ago?
More like 12
years. The borrowing, right. Right. Well, the other four.
1982.
Yeah. Is this part of the same political thing?
I guess
when
it's a
they
cycle.
Unearthed the CIA, so forth and so on. I'm gonna hang up.
I think it's just a cycle. I think it's just a cycle that happens. You know, the self-destruction of KPFK, and then three or four years from now, they'll bring in a Molly Lowry who will say, "I can't believe the amount of suspicion and paranoia at this place." Okay, let's go to another caller. Let's see. You've been waiting for a while. You're on with Bob.
Yeah. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hey, I'd like some more information about. I'd like you to talk a little more around lockdown, Bob Rule. You've been talking about a little bit this morning. I'd like to know if virtual reality plays into that, or how it might affect
does.
That.
And, let me
and
say
also,
this.
And the tone of that, it sounds a little menacing, you know, lockdown and rule and like that. And yeah, I'd like you to talk around all of that.
Okay. I'll give you a quote to begin. This is the situation that I'm operating in and why I have to use the words lockdown. This is the ground. And you said virtual reality. The virtual economy is a bioeconomy, a living species coming alive at that point where capitalism has been eaten by technology. If bioengineering can be an object of such fascination today, for example, nanotechnology, retinal screening for heads-up body scanners, recombinant genetics, the reason this is an object of fascination is because it is already a mise en scene. The fait accompli already happened. Presenting in the form of futuristic fiction, think of Gibson and science fiction, that which has already happened to us as we are fast sequenced through a processed world. Consequently, the steady announcement of new telematic discoveries, for example, molecular computer chips, cell size nano-bioengines for invisible travel through the bloodstream, new genetic hybrids from the labs of all the recombinant geneticists, these things cannot attract a ripple of discontent in the crowd, the Global Theater crowd, nor a muted cry of ideological discord, because these manifestations of technology outreach, a retrieval of old technologies, into the body electronic, or into Bob, the body electronic is Bob, are less in the way of a brave new horizon of telematic wilderness clear-cutting than already nostalgic signs of our wired past. In virtual economy, we have always lived through a specious present of nano-subjectivity, the disappearing body doing fast dissolves into relational networks. Retinal scanning is an objectification of a scanning procedure that the imaging systems of the electronic body, or BOD, have long demanded as their faithful dispensation, and molecular computers as latecomers to a post-human scene where the holopathic retrieval has long ago been uprooted from its earthly ground and compelled to re-enter the sea of floating data, or data, Star Trek. Ours is that curious age of future nostalgia, that point where the screenal economy of the electronic body, or BOD, registers in advance the spreading shockwaves of the will to technology, technology being rearview mirror now, the much-hyped culture of new wetware at the body-machine interface, think of Hans Moravec, then, as but object displacements of a mass of telematic reconfiguration that is always already post-history to the post-human body, a high-speed backbone. The virtual economy is always on overdrive as a spinal tap grid for the matrix of virtualized flesh. Now, that's the situation we're in today. Therefore, if I'm the only one totally aware of it, then lockdown Bob rule, and Bob is you and us and discarnate collectivity. Bob is the crowd. If I'm the voice of recognition of our state, then lockdown Bob rule means we become aware of what I am, or what the situation is we're in. If we we can today collectively, this is the downfall of the Antichrist. The Antichrist cannot prevent us from simultaneous perception as a crowd of the crowd dynamic we're in. So lockdown Bob rule means recognize what I am, what you are, and recognize that I've said it first. I'm not going to get any rewards for that. Just realize I'm the one who history appointed to say it first, to explain exactly our situation at this point of crisis. Lockdown Bob rule means static communion with me. Wave to me. Acknowledge and understand what I'm expressing and what I'm talking about.
I've got an idea, Bob. Well, you know how your name is all spelled capital B, capital O, capital B? It's like an initial. Well, I know what it means. It means body outside Bob. And
that's
of course,
right.
That Bob means body outside Bob, and that Bob is body outside Bob, and it just goes on forever.
Right, and therefore, that's why Carolyn and I, oh, forget that, forget the word Carolyn. That's why Connie and I are perfect embodiments of health, because we're the retrieval of the anthropomorphic dimension. We look like the ideal human being.
She's the perfect anti-virgin.
Anti-virgin?
Yes.
Yes. Very good, Dave. So, we are an image of the body outside the electronic body. We retrieve holopathically, our original first nature bodies. Therefore, you're right, Dave. Say the meaning again.
Bob, body outside Bob. Bob translated as body outside Bob. Bob translated as ad infinitum.
Yeah, and so body is the first nature body. It's retrieved via Connie and I. So we're the mirror of that, but we're trying to point out the disappearance that history led to.
Was Aurobindo pointing to this when he talked about his deal?
Yes. Aurobindo, there was a documentary on him in the 70s, which was broadcast in North America, and I made sure they had one of his followers say this line. He said he liked Aurobindo's village, Oroville. He liked being there because it was an integration of East and West. And he said, Aurobindo is the East, and he said, Marshall McLuhan is the West. He brought in Marshall McLuhan. There's not many New Agers that know of Marshall and could have said that. But I put it in the script. Now, the Marshall McLuhan disciple who came out of Oroville and Aurobindo is William Irwin Thompson. And William Irwin Thompson talks about the reunification of the male and female mystical relationship. He thinks Sri Aurobindo and the mother were an acting out of the post-patriarchal effect of Jesus Christ. So the male and female were brought together with the mother, that woman who worked with Sri Aurobindo, and with Sri Aurobindo together. Now, he picked up, he predicted through them the metaphor of Bob and Connie. He picked up, not a metaphor, but the actualization of Bob and Connie through his metaphor of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. That's why William Irwin Thompson is included in Phatic Communion as a source of relevant information. And he was influenced by Marsh McLuhan. But the downfall of William Irwin Thompson is he never read and understood Lyndon LaRouche, which he admitted to me. Oroville is the last line in, I think, Thompson's book, The Imaginary Landscape, he talks about the image. No, maybe it's The Time Falling Bodies Take Delight. He talks about the image of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, the male and female, united in a new way. And the new way is made possible by the electric discarnate state, which is neither male nor female. So because the environment, the electric environment, is a mirror of our future anthropomorphic state where there is a harmony between men and women, it's because men and women will be obsolete as categories, as experiences. And therefore, the men and women will be retrieved as an art form. And that leads to Frank Zappa's concept in his autobiography, marriage as a data concept. That's retrieving the anthropomorphic level as an art form. So the only way you can have a successful marriage today is to do it as a data concept. And that's very difficult to do. You were going to say?
I wanted to know if at the beginning of our conversation you were quoting, I was wondering if you were quoting from Croker or who you were quoting from.
I only quoted from Lyndon LaRouche.
Okay.
Now, I think it's interesting you think it's Croker.
Yeah.
When I read the indivisibility or the role of the scientist is to replay Kepler and Socrates' discoveries, that was LaRouche.
No,
mean the virtual economy?
Or something in the beginning of our conversation.
Oh, yeah, that
very
was
technical.
Information that Croker will use in the future. I will feed it to him.
Uh-huh.
It's more along his language, and that's why he's featured in Phatic Communion with Bob Dobbs. But what I read to you at the beginning of our conversation about the virtual economy is something straight out of the memos and minutes of a Secret Council of Ten meeting, where we define the present constantly. And we were trying to define the high-speed backbone of the virtual economy. And Croker, he has picked up on some of this stuff because he's a Canadian and he worked with McLuhan and I fed him a lot of information. And what I just read will show up in his writings later next year.
Okay.
In a book called Data Trash. Data Trash.
Blavatsky in The Divine Doctrine talks about the Buddhic plane as being like up there above the mental and the causal planes, and I couldn't help but notice the similarity between the sounding of the Buddhic plane or the Buddhi's constellation. I'm wondering if there's an analogy there to be drawn.
Yeah, good point. How does she spell? You mean B-U-D-D-H-A?
Well, she spells it B-U-D-H-I-C, I think. It's not spelled the same.
Buddhic, right, Buddhic. Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting also that Frank Zappa has on the cover of One Size Fits All, he has a picture of the constellations, and he includes the Buddhis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that he put it in there. Maybe it's because it's a well-known constellation. But Buddha is not Bobby. So
okay.
I think the Buddha metaphor, Gene Dixon is correct, is an antichrist. And that's why the New Age is an element of the Antichrist. Remember, Hugh Kenner wrote when Marshall McLuhan died, he talked about how Marshall, from Kenner's point of view, flipped out in 1949 and got mad at T.S. Eliot and the whole gang coming out of British intelligence, which is talked about in Norma Mailer's book, Harlot's Ghost. That whole gang, Marshall said, are trying to convert the world to Buddhism. Alan Watts was an agent of that, MKUltra, people at Stanford University. Now, many people find that hard to take today because the electric environment makes us naturally biased toward Buddhism. People are not going to feel animistic and feel antagonistic toward Buddhism. But that's where we're always tricked, because when imagination is embedded in the technology of its time, it doesn't have the detachment to see the Illuminati conspiracy. And the conspiracy is to turn the world Buddhist, and Blavatsky was the beginning of that. Nochi came in 100 years ago when the telegraph started to create the global theater with its global village content. So you've got to become a Catholic. But that is a real tricky thing to become, because the Catholics are part of the Antichrist too. So how are you going to be a Catholic? That's like, being a Catholic today is a data concept. And that's what I mean.
Shall we move on?
Don't be a Buddhist, because you'll be part of the crowd. You'll be part of the majority. The world is going to go to Buddhism. Thompson talks about this. The American Buddhist Challenge to traditional Buddhism, to Japanese Buddhism. The American Buddhism, coming out of Boulder, Colorado, and the Ginsburg gang, that is going to be really good brain candy for the 21st century. And many people will go for it. But if you want to be a subgenius, you don't want to be locked into one period of history. You want to be accessible to all times. Then you don't fall into that imaginative deception.
So how do you become a Catholic?
You listen to me, you study my holy offices, you listen to Dave Emery's catalog, which is sold up there in archives and audio. You do your homework, you live like I lived. See, the point is what I outline in Fatty Communion with Bob Dobbs in that book. It tells you how to imitate my life, not to become me, but to trigger the same synaptic slack luck subtleties that I got from going through the past 25 years. You want to do that. Those are the stages of apprehension you want to retrieve. So just read my liner notes and go to work.
Okay, Bob, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I got to say something here, because I really don't want to be a Catholic, and I only want to be lowercase c Catholic insofar as I am open to new things, but I also categorically reject much of what I find.
I agree.
Now, I was going to announce this in about 10 minutes, but let me announce it now just for safety's sake. Bob's CDs and tapes are available. That's Bob's Media Ecology and Bob's Media Ecology Squared. The CDs on the, what is this? This is, says Time Again Productions, are available at House of Records in Santa Monica, 2314 Pico Boulevard. And their phone number is 310-450-1222. That is Santa Monica's House of Records. And for more info on Bob, call 310-306-7330. Maybe one day this guy will get an answering machine. I know it would really make me happy if he had an answering machine, so I didn't have to get his house guests and calling him over and over again and never getting an answer. But I'm afraid he just isn't into the 21st century yet.
That's his form of media ecology. It's puny, but a brave effort.
By the way, speaking of Blavatsky, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a Beavis and Butthead episode where the phony fortune teller has taken on the name of Madame Blavatsky.
Yeah.
And in the end, she thinks that Beavis has the true sight into the future. But actually, all he is he's watching a reflection of CNN in her crystal ball.
Yeah, he's Al Goldstein, Screw magazine editor. He's Al Goldstein's version of Forrest Gump.
Actually, I think the world is I think that show really represents who's running the world now, all the way from macro down to micromanagement. It's one of the best mirrors of society, and I know that's why some people don't want to watch it.
Right, but it's pretty close to me.
This is great. We've got so many open lines and so little time to cover them, so I'll just shut up, and you're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, to be honest with you, I'm...
You don't have to be honest with me.
Large
Look,
part
honesty
of
is obsolete.
Here.
Just make it up.
Well,
just create content for me.
Yeah, I mean, I was rather concerned that I've always told people, the best way to subvert KPFK is internally rather than... blowing it off the air like they did in Houston when the Klan blew it off the air. But
what was your alternative? Instead of blowing it off, do what?
Well, the Klan blew up the
JFK
affiliate.
The best thing you recommend is what? Turning it off?
No. I'm concerned about KPFK becoming subverted from within. I mean, agent provocateur.
But that's what I've been doing for years.
But to be honest with you, you know, like I say, it'd be nice if somebody in 125 words or less would please explain what all of you are talking about, because, you know, I think a lot of listeners are probably like,
but we don't even know ourselves.
No, I know. Dave doesn't know. What bodies
stuff
you
about Kennedy and gunmen and stuff. I mean, you're totally confusing me. Right, so I'll.
Well, isn't confusion the door to enlightenment? We know that. We're good Buddhists.
Okay, well,
they talk about that all the time.
I won't get an answer
on KPFK.
Calling
so
either.
I've actually given you actually perceptualized confusion in you, which maybe KPFK doesn't do enough. It just talks about doing it. I've actually created an open door in your perception. You should thank me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how long can you stay in that state of confusion before demanding a name, the nominalist fallacy?
Well, I don't know how to respond to that. You have a good day.
Thank you. The nominalist fallacy. Look for the name.
Oh, I'm going to miss this part of it. See, this is someday we ought to get to together and do this, both of us discarnately on the air.
You mean at another station?
Somewhere. Well, any station, but both of us being discarnate.
Oh, you mean you want to have a private phone call with me?
No, we should have private phone calls, but on the air where both of us, neither one of us is like in the studio. That's
right.
What I'm saying. See, I don't really think it counts. I'm here in the studio, so I'm really here, and the rest of you don't exist.
That's right.
But see, if neither of us really existed, now that would be cool.
Yeah.
Okay, now you're on the air with Bob Dubs.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to have some information on gold, something a little more profound, say, than Anthony Sutton's book, War on Gold.
Well, one of the holy offices is Dr. Beter. On my liner notes, I mentioned Dr. Beter.
What's his first name?
Dr. Beter?
Yeah, B as in Bob, B-E-T-E-R.
What's his first name?
Well, that'll make everybody laugh. His first name is Peter.
Peter Beter?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. Now, he is the expert on gold, and if you can find his tapes, that's a real task, but he gives the history of what happened to the gold market from 1972 to 1982. I mentioned him in my liner notes, or actually in my book, Vatican Communion. It was Dr. Beter and I that prevented the Bolsheviks in the Pentagon from first nuclear striking the Soviet Union on September 17th, 1982. Dr. Beter is an incredibly valuable source of information.
Where
you
want
to get confused, you listen to Dr. Beter.
Did I find this at a university library?
The library? No. If you phone this number, 310-306-7330,
mm-hmm.
I think that person can eventually give you the source for Dr. Beter. It'll take a while, but we'll get it for you.
As far as I'm concerned, I mean, that's people are programmed to bargain for gold.
Yes.
I wouldn't say genetically, but that's absurd.
It's the thrill of the chase.
And then we're all being manipulated by being given paper.
Yes.
That's kind of obvious. I'm trying to understand LaRouche's market basket. I have a few of his books. Not
yes.
enough. His concept of the market basket,
yep.
which seems to be, that's what's going on now. I mean, there isn't really any such thing as paper currency. It's the commodities are too big for us to handle. They're, you know, super tankers full of oil.
That's right. They became mythic stages, worlds in themselves. Now, the virtual economy statement I read to you at first explains the discarnate economy, the economy that gold and paper are content of. Therefore, like false memory, gold and money can take on any size. They can inflate and deflate to any proportion. And that's the problem that normal economists have in understanding the economy.
Here's an idea for you, Bob.
Right.
Over email, does a currency inflate?
Is that why James Buchanan says he's embarrassed to even call himself an economist?
Yes. That's the self-consciousness that Forrest Gump offers us relief from. Every profession is obsolete, and every profession has been a conspiracy against the layman. And all professions are obsolete. All categories, all specializations are obsolete.
Isn't that movie about, I haven't seen that movie, but isn't that movie about a person's attitude, people's attitude towards money in our
yeah,
society?
Yeah, that's right. It's about Slow Bob in the lower dimensions.
Slow Bob in the lower dimensions.
Right. That's exactly what it's about. Now, the thing is that Buchanan and these economists are very self-conscious about their inadequacy, but they know the electric environment allows us to keep playing roles, to be actors in the global theater. Therefore, we can keep retrieving being an economist, even though it's anxious, it's anxiety-provoking because we know that it's inadequate. But our saving grace is that as long as we keep talking on the media and consulting to Wall Street Week and Louis Rukeyser and all these shows, we economists of the Secret Council of 10 can keep the economy going, because the electric environment is an incredible inflation of nothing by nothing. Now, as we move back into lockdown Bob rule, we will retrieve the anthropomorphic. We will retrieve our bodies, and you will find Bob and Connie the wealthiest people in the world with gold as our system prop. So we're going to bring back gold, and that's where LaRouche is partly right. But we can only do it if we turn off the electric environment temporarily.
Yeah, I sold my TV and VCR a year ago. It sure helps.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's slack. That'll give you slack.
Now, I want to talk about HDTV, too. Is there going to be, are people going to be stopping when they get HDD and they get the visual, the digital medium in their home? Is there going to be written information within the screen, such as, you know, letters, notes, signs, all kinds of things that people will be able to stop their video on and analyze?
Yep.
As they're watching the TV?
Yeah. I mean, the high-definition TV is like
more of a literate
earlier.
I know it's already
it's technology outreach. It is something that already exists, but for nostalgia, to keep the economists, you know, with their mortgages paid, we bring in obsolete technologies like high-definition TV. Paradoxically, though, the medium of high-definition TV will have all kinds of psychic effects on us. See, we're in a situation where we're going in all directions at once.
But won't people be stopping it and analyzing it? I mean, I watch,
privately.
I watch Monty Python.
Privately,
and I'm
not collectively.
It, you know?
Privately. We can't stop the collective under electric conditions. There's no replay. There's no instant replay under electric conditions. The content of TV is the instant replay. That is the main characteristic of digitalized TV, is instant replay. But that's the content. Replay is an illusion. We are on constant forward, fast forward, going nowhere, like the streakers. We're naked, going nowhere. We don't need to get dressed up. That is the actual horrible Bob fact that we live in, which none of us can deal with, and leads to confusions like firing Dave Porter.
Well, I didn't work here, so I technically can't be fired.
Well, I can buy all your books, huh? How many
yes,
books do you have?
You call 310-306-7330. That's where you get the books.
Great. Okay, I'll let some other people talk. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm glad he has LaRouche in his library. That guy's a true sub-genius.
Actually, you know, maybe I just kind of hostile the idea of turning off the TV because it's to me it's just like a toothbrush or a fork. You use it for a certain thing, but I wouldn't want to throw away a fork or throw away the toothbrush.
Well, this is the point of my album at the end of Bob's Meat Ecology 1. I say we can't turn off TV. We're not going to turn it off, Dave. This whole agenda I'm proposing is a vain extension of nothing by nothing.
Bob, your humanity is showing.
It's the last show. I must return to my body.
Well, why not?
5 minutes.
Yeah, well, we got... Let's see. Let's take the line...
It's never going to happen, Dave. We're never going to turn it off.
Well,
but
good.
In software wetware conditions, we just have to think about something collectively, and it's done.
What we have to do is...
So if we become aware of what my agenda is and think it, it is done.
We have to do what they do on C-SPAN with the Howard Stern people. They always call in and try and get a Howard Sternism off on C-SPAN, you know, because it's live radio, non-commercial, live television.
Time.
Well, we have to do that with Bob now.
That's what I do.
We got on the Ray Bream show, so we have to get, and he didn't know who you were.
Yeah.
Okay, now
Bob's
I'm going to take this.
Just get those words out.
Bob's Media Ecology, and this is my middle initial. You're on the air. Hello.
Oh, good morning, Bob.
Yeah, who's this?
Well, it's the best of times and the worst of times.
It's a paradox.
Yeah. However, for the individual called who wondered what you were talking about, I think you should at least suggested in a word that thought of this concept sort of like synchronistic linguistics or something to that effect. Because basically that's what you're doing. You're just trying to encourage people to recognize the pattern for themselves as the trees and the ever-densifying
retrievals
of the synchronicities.
Remember how Rumpelstiltskin did not want his name known? You have named me pretty accurately, pretty closely, synchronistic linguistics. If you include all technologies as linguistics, you've got the right term.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what Finnegan's Wake presaged.
That's right.
Ultimately, that's what's so brilliant. Now,
and that's why the electric environment, Dan Rather does synchronistic linguistics. That's what tetrad management is as it comes out of the DIA and the National Security Agency. That's how they manage the global theater, through synchronistic linguistics, which really numbs the population. So I am a mirror of that.
Right. Well, they strive for controlling, but the true natural phenomenon at the cosmic level of synchronicity, as I'm often want to say, is the only thing that they, whoever they are, can't actually control. And I mean, not in the ultimate sense of, as Rupert Sheldrake would conceive of morphogenesis and synchronistic patterns of
no, but they can't control your private settled consciousness.
Right.
But they can't, and that means they can't control you, capital Y-O-U,
right.
But they can control our synthetic crowd behavior. That's what you got to realize. You got to realize they are controlling it through synchronistic linguistics. They call it the audience participation mystique. They allow everybody to roam the planet to be what they want to be. In other words,
that's true.
If you read Marsh McLuhan's essay called Catholic Humanism and Modern Letters, written in 1954, he says the world government in 1954 used and understood that Finnegan's Wake was the key to world management. They understood that early, and Marshall blew the whistle, and they really nailed him for it.
Right. Well, I guess the think tanks probably would have been onto that.
Beg your pardon?
I guess the think tanks would have been onto that. They would
That's
have.
Right. I mean, the MKUltra program came out of something called the Human Ecology Fund, or Human Ecology Society. Think of that, 1953.
Yes, exactly. So, well, the reason that I actually called...
40 years later, in 1993, Dave Porter brought Bob to L.A., and that was the transition.
Yeah, it took me a year to get it on the air, too.
That's right.
It so threw me when I first listened to it.
Because you weren't willing.
I couldn't bring myself to air it until I had found the glimmering of Slack.
Oh. Well, I have plenty of Slack, too. I want to mention that. I got rid of my television but 11 years ago. But I didn't know why until now.
By the way, it took Bob about a year to play a replay part of that interview on his show before he was thrown off the air.
Hmm.
That's right.
Well, before we're ultimately thrown up the air, let me bring to your attention an interesting scenario, which by all indications is not a hoax and is for real, in the sense that it's been presented, which doesn't prove anything, ultimately, unless they have more smoking gun evidence, which I hope that they do for the sake of the public at large in this country. However, I'm calling to present this to Bob because his buddy at the end of the line of the number that he's giving out, I spoke to last night about this, and he encouraged me to bring this to your attention. So I'll try as rapidly to do it as possible. I'm a researcher into the ufological world.
Yes.
And a very interesting synchronicity occurred with me. That's I'm proud to say I do my research by noticing when and where the opportunities synchronously pop up. So I was back at the Brain Mind Symposium where Walter Bauert spoke back in July and made two very interesting points, which I thought were potentially a further can of worms that was going to open onto the stage of research into the quote-unquote alleged abduction scenario.
Quickly,
it was going to make it really, really difficult for the grounded people to deal with what is really happening and all
quickly,
that.
Quickly, caller. Quickly.
Huh?
We have a minute.
A minute left? That's not enough time.
Well, just say. So what did Bauert say? Just say it quickly.
Well, he said that possibly the mind control, satanic cultural ritual abuse, and the abductions were very similar in nature, and there was a PhD study that was written to correlate those symptoms. And I thought to myself, well, that's really amazing. What if that's actually the case? So sure enough, 2 months later, only in fact earlier this week, someone surfaced out of the woodwork to make a first-time ever public presentation before many people that claimed that this person, in fact, was that very type of person and that they were the product of satanic
That's going to have to be it.
And the NSA came along and took that person, a young person at a young age, prior to 10 years old, as well as a number of other children, and they enhanced their psychic abilities, which was the byproduct of the Kotorotu abuse, added more mind control, and used those children to send on as objective of psychic telepathic observers of what the aliens were doing on their ships. And then when the children came back off the ships, they were allowed to come on by the aliens. Then the NSA would debrief them, try and obtain information, and then put memory screens so they didn't remember the thing. Now that
that's going to have to be it, caller.
Information is obsolete. Walter Bowert will have to be explained in a future show when Dave and I go discarnate again.
Yeah, that's going to have to be it, Bob. I'm sorry. It was so interesting at the end, but I have to say goodbye now and play something that's never going to be heard again on the air.
310-306-7330 if you want to know more about Walter Bowert. It began with Walter Bowert. It ends with Walter Bowert.
And it ends with Bob.
And Walter needs to know that information is obsolete.
And it ends
and
with this program.
Everything you've ever said about abductees is not true.
Okay, Bob. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, David, for your incredible work. Enjoy your media fast. And thank everybody. And this show has been dedicated to Dave Emery.
It's going to create a separation, create a wall in the family.
The world loves the funny.
Genesis of a Music, Saturday mornings from 6 to 8:30. Music of the last 800 years, national and international.
Well, look, this isn't an argument. Yes, it is.
All kinds of unexpected music brought to you by David Porter on KPFK 90.7 FM.
I would certainly not publicize it.
Hey, Michael, did you listen to Bob's show?
I did. It was extraordinary. It was just the best thing I've ever heard on radio.
That's great. I'm glad you heard it.
I was just furiously taking notes, too.
Yeah.
And Bob, he's state-of-the-art, man.
He's state-of-the-art. You couldn't say it better, man.
I didn't know Will Humphrey was into it.
Yeah?
It was, and so was I. I mean, I picked up on the whole... I mean, it was like riding a roller coaster, man. It was a thrill of a lifetime. It was amazing, the revelations. And the thing about LaRouche.
Oh, to say...
Revelation.
To challenge me and go, well, Jerry did good with his McLuhan lecture, but now he's got to have LaRouche at Midnight Special.
That's a good tape to bring in just to show that this superior... There's nobody on the radio as good as Bob.
Nobody.
I mean, his media, this whole thing he had with... And that's what's missing. We don't have, other than maybe Camille Paglia, we don't have any pop culture person that can handle anything. You know, the big picture. I was having major revelations per minute, I'll tell you, RPMs. And it really made my weekend, you know. It got me real mellowed out. And I started sleeping better, even.
Sleeping better. That's
oh
good.
Yeah, more dreams. I mean, his it's just real calming, understanding.
It's a good way to put it. Bob put you back to sleep. And then he makes you say like David, I don't want to be a Catholic, Bob.
I gotta go, Jerry. But I was having major revelations per minute. I'll tell you, RPMs. And it really made my weekend, you know. It got me real mellowed out. I started sleeping better. You know.
Sleeping better, that's
oh,
good.
Oh, yeah. I was having major revelations per minute, I'll tell you, RPM.